Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Mike Johnson, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We've got Kyle Dubas coming up, the GM of the Leafs, at 540. And Ray will join us here in about 5 minutes, our TSN hockey analyst. I think we're texting each other about this yesterday. We never brought it up, that Mike Milbury has officially joined Twitter.
Yeah, I saw. I threw that in the group text just because he posted a picture of him with, like, the shoe.
He knows he's going to get carved. Like, I kind of appreciate that about him. He's like, all right, bring it. I'm here to defend all my moves as a GM.
That was the thing. There was some – I just went through the mentions just for fun. Like, people are like – it was almost like George Costanza's dad. Like, why the hell did you trade Jay Buhner? Like, there were so many – like, what did you – you traded Luongo, Chara.
The worst.
You know, like, why did you give that contract to DiPietro? Why did you give that contract to Yashin? You've crippled the Islanders. Like, all these Islander fans
Light
were
years.
Just
Light
giving
years.
Well, it, yeah.
Islanders fans are the worst. I got to be honest. I've been on the wrong end of just venom spat at me via Twitter from Islander fans because of Tavares and because of just a number of things over the years.
Really?
I remember tweeting a couple of years ago about how bad the ice looked one night. Like, and that's for both teams. Like, right? It was really choppy. The puck was bouncing everywhere. And I just tweet out, I'm like, man, the ice looks brutal. And they all took it personally. It was like all of Long Island just started tweeting at me. Like, you're scum. You're awful. Like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you're that committed to your ice?
Yeah,
like,
they're
Who cares about the ice? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't carve your organization. I said
Islander
the ice
fans,
looks
apparently.
Garbage.
Yeah, they're a passionate group, put
I
it that way.
So.
Very passionate.
But it got me wondering, like, who is
Milbury
the last sports figure that should jump on Twitter? Like, who is just, don't do it. Like,
well,
you're not in a good spot.
So it's already happened. It's that idiot O.J. Simpson.
You're right. That's the obvious one for, like, obvious reasons.
Yeah.
You know, the whole killing people thing.
The whole murder thing,
yeah.
Like, and the guy puts himself out there. But you're right. Like, as far as just as, you know.
I'm thinking Bill Buckner, if he was still alive. You know, like, that's what if Buckner was on, like, Twitter at any point, if Steve Bartman was on Twitter in Chicago, would people just start tuning him up in the mentions?
Is Lance Armstrong on Twitter?
Yeah, he is.
Lance Armstrong's got the 30 for 30 doc out, but I imagine people would have something to say to him.
Is he universally hated?
Indignation about not doing it.
Like, does anyone support Lance Armstrong? Does anyone like him? Anyone?
Well, I know somebody who likes him, but they're in business with him and say he's a fantastic guy. It's just, you know, unlikable about some of the things that went down, obviously. But, you know, I'm just asking out loud. Did he not do any good? I thought he was raising money for cancer and stuff like that. Like, has he done some good things out there, or is it just all negative?
I
haven't followed
it.
Close enough. He seems like
you know,
he's
he did, but the problem that I have with him is not that he cheated, because a lot of people were cheating. Clearly, everyone was cheating. Is that when he was caught, he was so indignant about how dare you? I have never. I wouldn't. Like, just, you know what? You got caught. Kind of. Even if I want to say, you know what? No. I haven't tested net positive, but just to get up and sue people and defame them,
that's
just to prove
it.
That. You were something that you were doing. That's what gets me. It's not that you cheated. A lot of guys in cycling were doing. I can okay with that. Marion Jones, the sprinter. Yeah. It's not that you're doing steroids. It's that when you're on the courthouse steps saying, "How dare you question me? Excuse me. You know you're flat out full of it when you're doing that."
Right.
So that's. I mean, if I'm
that's
Lance Armstrong,
I'm
imagining people might have something like that to say to him.
It came out like that he was getting people fired. He was tarnishing other people's reputations. He was letting them take the fall. And when all that started to unravel for him, it was like, man, this guy, forget the cheating. Like, of course you're cheating. Do you know how inhumane, like, the Tour de France is? Like, what they have to go through.
Yeah, bodies are not supposed to do that.
It's not humanly possible. Like, it doesn't even seem possible unless you're going to extend it, like, days or hours. But how grueling that sport is. Like, of course they're all doping, and of course it's unnatural. Like, we kind of get it. You know, it's like wrestling. Like, we get it. Like, a lot of you you're taking PEDs. You're taking something. Okay, go for it. As long as everyone kind of knows it, hush, hush.
Right.
But when you start getting outed, And then you start just throwing everyone else under the bus and demanding people get fired. It's like, wait a minute, dude. Like, don't start with that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's like A-Rod. A-Rod was the same thing. A-Rod kept getting caught. He's like, I didn't do it. I'll never do it again. All right, you got me. It's like, well, why'd you do that, man? Like, yeah. You got caught. Own it. It sucks. You're well, so great. And you still have the money. You're going to keep playing. It's not like they're going to kick you out of the league.
Yeah, so and Lance Armstrong would be good.
Was it Andy Pettit?
Pettit came back and just said, you got me.
Well, was it Andy Pettit who he got me? And everyone's like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Move on.
Yeah.
We still
Jason
like
Giambi.
It.
He's like, yeah, I did it. You know, everyone else was, you got me. It's like, all right, see you later, dude. We don't care anymore. joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline.
Done.
Here's Ray Ferraro. What's happening, Ray?
Just off the course, when you were talking about PEDs, I was like, I sure as hell didn't have them today. It's a working day today.
Is it ugly out there or what?
I birdied the first hole and birdied the last hole, and unfortunately there were 16 in the middle of it. Man, that was hard today.
Yeah. I actually haven't mentioned this yet. I played this morning myself.
How did it go?
Ooh.
I shot really well, but the card just it didn't add up, if that makes sense. And Ray, maybe you, it's such a golf term.
You shot a 90 on the card, but you felt really good about your game.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
I shot an 88, but I actually felt really good. Like, I started really well. I should have been 3-under through four holes, and I was choking putts away, and then I just started tripling and doubling and got away from me. You know what it's like, Ray. It happens.
Well, I was 2-over on the ninth tee, and my next par was on 17, and I was 11-over.
Yeah.
It's like I forgot how to play for 2 hours. I'm like, I forgot how to play. I don't even know what the hell I'm doing here.
So but great being out.
What are the rules and stuff? What are the rules and stuff like out there, Ray, for golf? What are, like, you know, showing up? Can you use the range? What's a golf experience like out in BC?
A lot different from a couple of weeks ago to now. We're allowed to use the range, but only every second stall. The balls are on the ground. You can't use a tee because they're on the mats. You know, they're the rubber tees. So they don't want any contact points, but you can use the range now. You can play in foursomes. They still have a 10-minute gap between tee times, so you never really see anybody. You can use pull carts. They're sanitized, and they've got a pink ribbon on the ones that are clean, and you can use those. The clubhouse isn't open. The restaurant's not open. You can get a water at the half, you know, at nine holes, but really, honestly, Johnny, it's pretty much golf, except I guess the one thing is the pins stay in and there's a pool noodle in the bottom of it, so the ball doesn't go up to the bottom of the cup.
I think it's amazing, though, man. I have played twice, and it is a complete reprieve from society and from what we've been going through for 2 months. Like, even if I'm chopping it around, I'm like, yeah, it's all right. Like, I'm not going to wrap my 7-iron around this tree. I'll wait a month to do that. But it's, you know, like, it really feels like it's just normal. Like, and if you golf, I'm sure you're trying to get out there and you'll appreciate it once you do. If you don't golf, I would suggest now's the time to try it. Like, or do something, you know, if you can, within the guidelines, clearly. But if you're a golfer and you get out there, to your point, Ray, once you're off the first tee, you're playing golf. It's not that different. You're just playing.
Well,
it's fun.
You know, the one thing, Brian, I will say is, like, there is it's the most normal place that I feel. Like, I don't feel normal in the in the grocery store. I don't feel normal, like, out in public. But I go play golf, and I'm, like, kind of, like, normal.
Yep.
You know, like, it's as close to it as we've got right now.
That's right.
I was going to say, like, does any of this change your mood? Like, I guess regular, when things were normal before the pandemic, if you had a bad golf game, are you pissed off? Do you leave the course pissed off? Or do you leave, like, isn't golf supposed to be like a relaxing, good for your mental well-being type of sport?
No.
I would anxiety-inducing.
Sucks.
You know
I
what?
Hate it.
I'm like, by the time you finish your beer on the 19th hole, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm so
for
Yeah, we'll throw him on hold. We'll get Ray back.
Yeah. Just he's on the 19th hole right now, having a second.
Yeah, he is on the 19th hole.
Yeah, exactly. No, but, he's – I mean, to answer that for Ray, he's right.
Right.
Once you're on the way home or whatever, like, who cares? Like, you're not on tour or anything. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But you're not good enough to get upset, really. Yeah.
But you can if you're competitive, which I think we all are, and if you've set a bar, at some point you shot really well and you're always chasing that. And if you're gambling, like today, right. I was playing with a couple of buddies who were going at it. Like they both were spraying it all over the course, taking provisionals. Like they almost came to blows over provisionals. Like I'm sitting there watching these two hooligans. I'm like, are you guys serious? Like,
yeah.
And they're playing for, you know, it's cash. It's not a crazy amount of money, but it's cash. So it adds, you know, a bit of an edge to the game. And one guy doesn't want provisionals. The other guy wants provisionals. One guy is like demanding, you know, basically USGA rules. The other guy
wants.
It's
the same conversation, Hayes.
It's crazy.
Every group that gets gambling, it's all the same. Like everyone gets the same kind of arguments between each other. Somebody's playing well. Someone's crushing a drop. It's you can't help yourself.
It's the worst.
And then you have a beer and it's all done.
And if you're one of the guys, like I was involved in kind of a skins match, so I had something going on, but I wasn't involved in the two of them. And they call me out for, like, a witness. Like, isn't it supposed to be a provisional? Hey, aren't you supposed to not do this? And I'm like, I'd prefer not to be included in this. But, you know,
I guess
if I'm the marshal for your gambling here, I guess I'll have to be. Anyway, we got you back, Ray?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, buddy.
I don't know what happened.
What are you going to do?
I was going to say, I feel great when I'm at the course. It's the one thing that I can still be good at. And... yeah, and I just love, you know, the picking part. Oh my gosh, like it's the best. And everybody's in a, you know, you feel tension. You're playing for $2 and you're like, the hell does it matter? But I'm like, I want to beat him.
You have to not give him up.
Yeah.
You have to. The competitive nature starts to pick up.
But Brian, you said in your mind you have probably your greatest game ever in your memory bank, and you're trying to achieve that every time out. So if I had asked you, like, what's your greatest game? Could you tell me? It was like, I was a Tuesday afternoon and I shot a 72 or, you have it in your memory bank right now.
Yes, I do. I broke 80 at Scarborough once. I shot 79 and I hit like a 15-foot putt that I had to hit to break
it.
80. Yeah, I made it.
Nice.
I hit it. And on 18, I did the full, like, tiger. Like, it was ridiculous. People were watching. Like, what a loser. Like, Kirk Gibson fist pumps around the green.
And to salvage it. It's 89.
Yeah. And it was just me and my buddy. It was the two of us. And I think it was midweek in the summer, 7-8 years ago. Yeah, I remember it. Absolutely. Because it's one of those things, like, Ray, you can attest to this. You get to 9 and you're like, that was pretty good. I shot, like, 37. That's good. Okay. And then you're at 13 or 14, you're like, that's a couple pars. Like, okay, like you just feel it. You're like, I kind of sense I'm going somewhere where maybe I haven't gone before. It's like Star Trek.
There's that you sense. Or like today when I got to 14, I'm like, this round is over. I stink.
The worst.
And you're like, and I still got five holes left. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And you just, and then, you know, the golf god gives you a, you know, like I birdied 18, so now I got to go back and play on Friday.
Yeah, well, of course. That just, it's natural.
Have you ever quit? Have you guys ever quit? Like, said, the hell with this. Like, I can't do it. It's 13th or 14th hole. Like, you do the John Daly, pick up your ball, and you're
like, I haven't. That's tough.
No, but I have. When you finish 6th, you're right by the clubhouse, and then you play 7, 8, 9. You get back to the clubhouse, and the range is right there. So I played 6 holes. I was all over the place. I don't know where I was. And I said to the guys, I'm done for 3 holes. I'm going to the range. They're like, what? You can't do that. I said, oh, yes, I can.
Yeah.
So I stomped over to the range and slashed balls around the range and then joined back up for the back nine. That's the only time I quit like that.
That's a move. Put me down for 3 pars, 7, 8, 9.
I was hitting it really well in the range.
Yeah.
Put me down for pars.
And I'll just pick you up on 10. So, you know, the news yesterday, we were talking about it and trying to figure out exactly what was said and what was detailed from Bettman and Company about the 24-team tournament. We got Kyle Dubas coming up in about a half an hour. And I guess he said today on a conference call that Nick Robertson will be a part of of the roster, whether it's 28, 30, whatever. Robertson played with the Petes this year, I think led the OHL in goal scoring and put up just a monster season. Played for the Americans on their top line at the World Junior. You would have seen him there.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, like, he's a really committed kid. He's a workout fiend, really driven. But can you picture any scenario where Robertson actually plays any games if and when they happen this summer?
Yeah, I think so, because Johnny would be able to speak to this a little bit more about the college players that come in. But that happens in the playoffs quite frequently. I have in my memory where a player kind of just gets dropped in because they've signed and they've been around.
Chris Kreider.
We were playing a playoff series, and John Bice was a player. He signed from the University of Wisconsin, and the Bruins had an injury or two, and he was in. And he scored in Game 7 against us. So, look, Robertson's a good player. He's fast and tenacious. He's a kind of a bulldog sort of guy. Really nifty, good hands. He's an excellent pick for them. And I could see that if things go a little wonky that you might see him. Like, I absolutely could see that with this kid.
Feels like things almost have to go well and then wonky, though, Ray, because I can't imagine him getting into a first-round play-in series of just 5 games if it gets to game 4 or 5 and they have not won and they have not looked great doing it, because there'd be so much on the line. But if they're able to get into the actual playoffs of the second round, who knows, you know, injuries creep in or whatever it might be. But you think Cale Makar, now he's not Cale Makar, but Cale Makar jumped in the playoffs, scored a goal in his first game. A few years ago, Chris Kreider, who was not a prolific scorer in college, jumped out of Boston College, I think it was, right into the New York Rangers playoffs. So it's not out of the question. And again, he's not going to be, he's coming in as fresh as anybody else. Like, the rhythm of the season is disrupted for everyone. So he'll have a jump on it as anyone might to kind of prove himself with the right kind of team that appreciates his skill.
Yeah. And Johnny, here's another, he's good. Like, he's a good player. I like, do we love the Toronto Bombs so much that you couldn't see an improvement? Well, maybe this kid might be able to give you a little bit of dash. I'm with you. Once, you know, they're going to start with the lineup that they have, you would think, most likely. Although, if there's one team right now, the way that they're constructed and the way that they talk and the way that they view their players, that might come out of left field and start someone that's never played for them before, it would be Toronto.
Well, and it's not like their left side is like inundated. Like, that's probably one of the weaker components to their roster.
Yeah.
Is it not? So, I mean, if you feel like he can play left wing on your third line, then, and you could still give him top 9 minutes, but shelter him away from, you know, top pairing defensemen and stuff, would you not give him a run? Like, would you not see if he could, you know, fit into that lineup and have some jump and have some, like, we all know who's in the top 2 lines, but could you see Robertson as an upgrade on who the soup man?
Yeah, you know, that, that's probably who he's battling with, right?
Right, like, you know, if this guy's a better player, by all accounts,
forget,
he is.
You know, Jamie, you bring up Mikheyev, right? He hasn't played since when?
December.
Yeah, I was going to say January, but
man,
December.
That's
going
to be a tough thing to catch up to.
Right.
You know, like, maybe he's not the player that we remember from December, right? Like, maybe, you know, it's just he's been away too long. Like, that's very possible. And it might take him a while, and maybe it doesn't even come back for him right now. And, like, this kid's good, man. Like, he's not like he's going to jump in and you're going to go, oh, that's a 50-goal score and all that. What you are going to see is an energetic player who is determined. He gets to the puck. When he doesn't have it, he goes and gets it. He's fast. He's strong. Like, here's the thing about small players that, like, you know, of course, I got a soft spot for the little guy, but you can be little and small, like thin and not very strong, or you can be little and thick and strong. And Robertson's built blocky. Like, he's a strong kid. Sure, it would be a hell of a jump for him, but it wouldn't surprise me that if we get a peek at him as this thing along.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a part of me that wonders how all these organizations are going to handle this play-in round robin. I mean, I would assume you're in it to win it, clearly. You should be. I mean, that's the nature of competition. And, hey, who knows? It's such a crapshoot. Maybe you go on a run.
Right.
But is there a chance some teams look at it as kind of found money and like a development opportunity? And I don't think the Leafs would fall in that category. The Leafs were supposed to compete for a cup this year. It didn't look like it at any point in the 70 games they played, but they were supposed to. You know, they're supposed to be locked in as an elite team. But I wonder if there's going to be a team that is like, you know what, we'd rather play a kid than a guy whose deal is going to expire in a month and a half and we're walking from, you know?
Sure, I can see that, but I don't think of it as a development sort of tournament. No matter what team is, but you, in the scenario you gave Brian, if there's leaving, you know what he can give you, and you're like, you know what, this kid might be able to give us a little bit more, and he's going to be, you know, it's a wild card whether he can or can't, but he's going to be here for sure. Maybe they would play him. But I can't imagine teams are looking at this just like, you know, like going to Traverse City in the prospects term.
No, and they shouldn't. Of course not. But, you know, the tie would maybe go to the younger guy, where conventional wisdom would suggest tie goes to the experienced guy. You know, maybe it's just that simple. It's just a little bit different. A little bit of a different motivation and approach. We'll leave it there. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5. Good stuff, buddy.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, guys. Have a good one.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. People noticing,
hey,
I am a new man. I'm a new man. That was bad cell reception, but it's
good. You were teetering.
Yeah, not stressed at all.
Oh, I'm fine.
You were teetering. It's because you're golfing today.
Yes. What about this, though, Brian?
Yeah.
So you talk about putting in young players. So before the teams will play the play-in rounds, they will know if one of those 8 lettered teams happened to win the lottery, right? Because they'll know the lottery order.
Right.
1 or 2 or 3. And you'll have basically a 1 in 8 chance of that being you. Let's just say one of those letters gets first overall pick. Now you're heading to the play-in round thinking, so if we don't win, we have a 12.5% chance of getting first overall.
Yeah, Lafreniere. Yeah.
Where, like, how do we judge that now?
Oh,
maybe we want to use it more as a developmental thing because we have that. Or even better for the teams in the play-ins, what if 2 or 3, all 3 of the top picks go to those unnamed teams? Now all of a sudden you're like, okay, we got a decision to make.
Do we try to grind
in and get knocked out for
really
not a lot of money,
point.
Not a lot of home revenue?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Really valid point. Like how many teams will look at that? Let's say, which it seems almost impossible, but it's not. Let's say all 3 picks are won by play-in teams.
Right.
And you're looking at that, you're thinking, man, like we have there is only going to be 8 teams.
3 in 8 chance.
3 in 8 chance of us getting one of those top 3 picks. Which, even if we win this best of 5, we're playing St. Louis in the next round. We're not going to win that. Or we play Boston and we don't feel great about it. Maybe a miracle pops up, but we're not winning 16 games beyond the 3 we just won. Like, it's not going to happen. So is it in our best interest, when we had already sold our fans kind of based on the whole regular season that this was not our year to begin with?
I could see Chicago and Montreal having that mindset.
Exactly. I could totally see that. Where, like, it's not going to apply up here in Toronto, I don't think.
Minnesota? Arizona?
Minnesota is the number one, I think. Like, Bill Guerin's in there. They got a new coach. Like, what are we doing here? We're supposed to reload. They're old. They got a clear cap space.
They're not winning this year.
They're not winning anything this year. They're not winning anything next year either.
Right.
Like that's where I wonder if the NHL, like, I guess they have to reveal who won the lottery. It's a TV production, but are you going to cause yourself a bit of a competitive issue if multiple spots, you know, in the top 3 are up for grabs for teams that lose?
I know this is probably the, you know, a weird thing, but I secretly want, like, the number 1 pick to be a letter. I do. I think it adds more theater. It really does.
It's the best of both worlds for
if we want team chaos all year long,
right? Like
that will be it.
You're right. Like I want the Ottawa Senators to have two fantastic picks because that organization has broken it down. They're rebuilding. They've got some really good pieces to build around. So they're going to get two really good players. But like if that one pick doesn't go to the first seven there, the first overall pick, man, that would just be great theater. Because that's what you're talking about. All of a sudden, team loses in this play-in round, and they're picking first.
Well, it does is it basically extends the lottery. Like right. The suspense of the lottery and the entertainment value, it just gets extended like 2 months.
We're in the content business. This is what you want, Hayes.
I'm all for it. Dude, I'm all for it.
And it makes the second lottery more important than the first one.
Which would that be public? Would that be an event?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Draw it out.
I guess
you'd have
to, right?
Yeah.
Pairing up the teams with the letters.
Okay. Well, let's push for it, man. I'm all for chaos right now. Once we get to it, let's get crazy. Like, once we get to sports, let's really do something different here.
Yeah.
Always call me out on Twitter about my 79 at Scarborough. What an idiot.
Tiger pump, this garbage never stops.
He's calling me out on fake
news. I thought this guy's on holidays.
Oh, yeah, he's a busy guy. Yeah, he's got a lot on the go. anyway, yeah, we got Kyle Dubas coming up in 15 minutes. Matthew Schneider from the PA at 6:05. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Kyle Dubas in about 10 minutes. Matthew Schneider from the NHLPA at 6:05. I'll have to get an eyewitness for my 79 at Scarborough from back in the day.
Apparently.
Yeah,
I got a card.
Yeah. Apparently there's a stickler online. Guy, that's what this is the equivalent of someone calling in a PGA rules infraction.
Why? What did he say?
Well, he's tweeting. O's tweeting. He's sitting at home. He's on vacation. He's got nothing better to do than call in basically an infraction, you know?
Well, how does
even
he?
If they're, so are you admitting there was an infraction then? Because it seems like he's reporting something.
79.
There you go.
Legit.
There you go.
Yeah. Multiple
Hey,
it's
big news I just read. It looks like there's more stuff opening in Toronto. Dentists, optometrists, chiro, physio, psychologist.
Really?
Massage therapists.
Ooh.
Wow.
Music
I'm
optional?
Just saying, music will be in there. No question.
Okay.
Yes.
Where
you
did
go.
That come into play? Okay, I've seen that on CP24. I like
there it. There it is. That's where I got it. Yeah.
All right. The Asia, the orchids of Asia.
There
up
it
here
is.
In Toronto needs to be available. It needs to branch out. We need some franchising out here.
It's ambience. Toronto. That's what you're looking That's for. It. Some music in the background.
That's right. Yeah.
I like
exactly.
It.
Like a massage is great. You know, I don't get a massage very often. In fact, I didn't get one until I was like 30, the first time I ever had a massage.
Really?
I think I was probably like 30 years old, but they're very enjoyable. But if you don't have music, it's like, we're just missing something here, right? And I brought up that analogy was watching a sporting event without like fan noise or without some sort of humming in the background, like an artificial sound that just deviates from the hollowness of the broadcast.
Basketball would be the worst because they play music the whole game anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, even with fans there, they got their beats rocking as the guys are walking up the court. So, I mean, basketball, they can't just have the squeak of the shoes on the court. Like, they're going to need something to make those broadcasts feel a little bit more normal.
Yep, 100%. Have you guys seen the pictures circulating of Mike Tyson just shredded? Like, shredded.
12-pack. That guy's terrifying still.
12-pack. Yeah.
He's 53 years old, and he would just chew you apart if you wanted to. But Holyfield looks pretty good, too. Like, they had a picture of Holyfield and Tyson right now, what they look like. And I'd watch that fight.
So would I. Anything Mike Tyson, I'm still – if he's fighting, I'm in. Like, I'm in.
What if you start watching it, and, like, while he looks in great shape, he does have a gray beard. He's 50-something years old. And, like, I've seen the clip of him in the kitchen teaching someone how to fight, and he's, like, moving at a terrifyingly fast pace with his hands still. But, you know, he gets in a fight, and if it's two 50-year-old guys slugging it out all slow and looking like they're 50 years old, despite being in great shape, like, it would be pretty disappointing quickly. Like, what? I can't. It's like watching, you know, two dads fight at the local ball diamond or something.
I know. It would be. Like, if it went, now, Holyfield offered 3 rounds for charity. So it's not going to be, you're not in the seventh round and watching these two guys can't get up and get out of their corner. But I don't know if you've ever seen this like, it's almost like a GIF or a thing online where there's these old people that are fighting. Have you ever seen that? With that, there's an old man. He's fighting like four other old men, and they're coming at him, and he throws one to the ground, and then the other one goes. I don't know if you have you ever seen. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know if I've seen that. No,
it is the greatest scenario. Just search it out.
Okay.
It's almost like one of those Rex Chapman GIFs online.
Right. Block or charge.
Right. Block or charge. Like a guy coming at him, and he punches the old man, throws him down. Another guy goes down. You got to watch it. It's hilarious.
Okay, I'll find that. I think. The greatest old man tilt of all time is Joe Capp and Angelo Mosca, as we know at the Grey Cup. But that I think if it's someone within your age bracket, which it would be, and it's professional fighters, it's not just random people off the street, and if you put a time limit on it, you'd have something there. But I do think it has to happen sooner than later. Once the real sports start kicking up, it'll be like, all right, I don't need this novelty. Like, it's almost like they got to get in the ring in the next month and a half. But we'll see. All right, Matthew Schneider coming up in about a half an hour from the NHLPA. Kyle Dubas will join us next. We'll get his take on the 2014 playoff format, how he thinks the Leafs stack up against Columbus, how he reviews the season now that it's officially in the rear view. Nick Robertson, what has to happen for him to play games this summer. That and more with the GM of the Maple Leafs. Kyle Dubas will join us next. All right, Matthew Schneider from the NHLPA in about 25 minutes. Kyle Dubas going to call in here in just a moment. Haven't caught up with Kyle in a long time. And we'll see what he has to say about the regular season officially being in the rear view. I guess we can look back and get him to grade it or explain how he feels about the regular season. And there's got to be an element of comfort knowing that you're still going to play again. Right? Like, right. I think they were going to get in over an 82-game season, but it wasn't a guarantee. And if they missed, that would have been catastrophic.
Right.
And people would have been freaking in Toronto about a team with this much talent and the expectations being as high as they were going into the season. That would have been difficult to explain if they missed. But now you don't have to worry about that because they're in.
Yeah, they don't
and
have
in
to
many
work.
Ways, their chance is as good as anyone now that they're in. I mean, you know, they got to do the play-in. It gets harder, but it's, you know, if they were going to be, what, fifth, sixth, seventh favorite heading into the playoffs, I don't know where they would sit in the top. But now I think just with having everything that's happened, they have as good a shot as anyone, which is all most athletes ever really want.
Yeah, and every organization, I guess, right? Yeah. Like if you're talking – like a four-month layoff and everyone's in a hub city and no fans. It's a complete equal playing field for the most part.
Right.
Just talent on talent, health on health. And if all these teams are locked and loaded, I think the Leafs will look at themselves on paper and they're not the best team in the league just because of a shutdown. But I would say of the 24 teams left, I still think talent-wise they're in the top half.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say top half for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Like there's no doubt about that. But, you know, again, it comes back to who knows what's going to happen. You just got to hope that everyone is kind of firing on all cylinders. They're in shape. They're feeling good. Injuries don't play into it, you know, throughout the, you know, training camp. Like guys push it too hard. Like that's the biggest thing. A three week ramp up, like guys' groins, their hip flexors, everything that comes along with all of that, like I always say, you're at your most healthiest as an athlete day one of training camp, but then after that you're chasing whatever is nagging you. So that's the biggest challenge. But if they're healthy and feeling good about their game, they're right there in the top echelon of the group.
Yep. And I saw earlier today, I think it was David Pagnotta that tweeted this out, that he spoke with Bill Daly, and the intention is, or the game plan is, for each team to play two exhibition games before they even begin the play-in round or the round robin. So
that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
we talked about the need for that, like trying to jump in 4 months into a 3 out of 5 elimination. And if you're one of the teams, you know, if you're a team that came fifth, sixth, seventh, you have legit aspirations of winning a cup. So yeah, give them a couple games, let them bump into somebody other than their own team. let them ratchet up the intensity, and then dump them into the play-in round. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
I think it allows you to get out of the way the eeriness of playing in an empty building.
Go through, yeah.
Going, you know, the hub city, getting out there for the first time. I think there's a lot of advantages to that, not only knocking the rust off, but also mentally. Okay, we've played. It's the real thing. It's just hockey. Mm-hmm. Now we can really start up. That makes a lot of sense.
I agree, and you're going to have to act like, I don't know, Johnny, if you ever played any exhibition games in a neutral site where maybe smaller building or, you know, I played a neutral site game once where it was exhibition and the crowd wasn't that big. So you're kind of like, it was quiet, it was a bit eerie. So I like that there is going to be potentially a couple exhibition games before you get going, just to get the feel and the lay of the land before, you know, it's game on type of thing.
All right, let's bring in the GM of the Maple Leafs. We haven't caught up with him in a while. Here he is, Kyle Dubas. How you doing, Kyle?
Hey, guys. I'm good. How are you doing?
We're doing well. We've taken advantage the past, you know, couple days or week or so of actually talking about hockey for the first time in a month and a half, and we know who you're playing. You know, if and when you come back, you're playing Columbus, best 3 out of 5. I guess we'll start there. How do you like the matchup for your team?
Yeah, I don't think we haven't really spent a ton of time yet looking so much at the matchup precisely. I think our focus right now has to be on our own team and what we can do to control everything that we do. And the one thing that I think we've stressed, Brian, has been that I think there's going to be a massive advantage and a massive edge to the teams that come back in great physical condition and in great shape and able to guard against injuries and all the other things that are going to crop up as we do something that's unprecedented, which is return right back into the heat of competition. There's not going to be a long training camp and an 8-game exhibition season and then 82-game regular season schedule. It's going to be right at it. So we're trying to look at all those various things and, you know, not obsessed about Columbus for 7 weeks. Once we get a little bit closer, I think we'll shift the attention to them. They're obviously a very, very well-coached and well-managed team and have a great identity to them. So that we're certainly not taking them lightly, and we know what we'll be in for in terms of style of play. But I think right now we just really need to focus on ourselves and putting ourselves in the best spot to have success.
Well, Kyle, talk about those players. Maybe give us a sense of where your team is at physically. Like, where are they in the world? How many guys are in Toronto? How many guys are elsewhere? Will everyone be healthy when you guys come to play? Let's assuming it's around August 1st. Mikheyev, Riley, even Janssen. Where is your roster at?
As of right now, I mean, we do have guys on the injured reserve. Of those players on the injured reserve, I think it's our expectation, Mike, that Muzzin and Mikheyev will likely be cleared. They can't formally be cleared until they go through that entire return to play process, which will include actual practicing and contact and so on. So they remain on the injured reserve. Janssen will not be ready. He's a ways away yet, and it was a pretty substantial surgery, this six-month recovery at the time, and that was in mid-March. So he's still, you know, 3 months away or approximately 3 months away from us even considering him as eligible. You know, in terms of where the guys are, most of them are making their way back to Toronto from the sounds. We've got some guys in Europe, some guys in the U.S., but we've got a lot of players in Canada and a lot of players in Toronto already. So I think that'll be a positive for the players that want to take part in phase two and volunteer to do so.
Kyle, I just want to jump on Mike's question a little bit, just talking about the roster and even roster size. You know, you see through the playoffs, teams have to rely on their depth because there is injuries. And if you're looking to win 16 games or 19 games or however it's going to work, that you know, you may have to rely on some of your depth. Do you feel like, I know it's being reported the 28 and maybe as many goaltenders as possible. Is that enough to make a long run, or is there maybe some potential pushback on having more players at accessible because there's nobody else, there's no other leagues to draw on? You're just going to have your team right there.
Yeah, I wish I knew the exact answer, Jamie, on all those fronts. And because there's really no experience for anybody to draw on, maybe the only kind of relevant example would be, you know, whether it's the Canada Cups or the World Cups that have happened prior to the season and in August and September previously, where the players would have been off for a long time and then return to those camps and get into those types of competitions right away. And maybe the Hlinka Gretzky Memorial Tournament that happens for those types of players in the summer, the junior age players. But with regards to going through a Stanley Cup playoffs, there's certainly nothing to reflect back on and see how it's going to go and how many players we're really going to need. I think the thing about our depth is that one of the benefits in looking back at the season is that we you know, what certainly wasn't a benefit at the time, but we did have quite a few injuries, just all various freak things to, you know, Riley, Muzzin, Mikheyev, and all the way down the list of our guys that missed time. And I think we know what we can expect from our players and that have served in those depth roles. And it's also given us an opportunity to see what someone like Justin Hall can do when doing more, Pierre Engvall and various different players like that. So I think we like our depth and are happy with it. But I think we're excited to see the team fully healthy again. And as it pertains to how many guys we're going to need, I'm sure hopeful that the 20 that started, the 20 that finished, I think, as you know, from your time, that's very
good
wishful.
Luck.
You and Mike Dodds, that's wishful thinking, and especially when they haven't been doing anything for a few months. But I think we'll, you know, if it's 28 or whatever we have to take with us to the hub city, you know, I'm sure that if there are various issues with it, it seems like nobody's going to want a situation where teams don't have enough players. And I'm sure that the NHL and the NHLPA, as they have throughout this process, will likely find a way to make something work.
With Kyle Dubas, and you mentioned earlier today that Nick Robertson will be one of those players that you're intending on bringing along for the ride. And I think it's safe to say Nick is the most highly touted prospect in the organization. And social media is his star, just based on his workouts and what he did in Peterborough this year. What has to happen, though, for him to actually play games? Can you picture him playing games once you get started?
I guess it's going to depend on how he performs, not so much in this phase two, but once we get into the training camp portion of it, Brian, and you know, whatever is formally decided on the exhibition front. I saw yesterday that there was some talk about it being two exhibition games, and once that's all formalized and done, then I think we'll have a bit better of an idea in terms of what will be available for Nick, but and for all of our players that are battling for roster positioning. I think once we have an idea of what that's going to look like, the training camp, how long the training camp's going to be, what type of training camp format we'll get, he'll get an opportunity, as will all of our guys, to show where they're at. And that's the way that we'll likely base it. If he performs the way that he's capable and shows where he's at, I could see him getting opportunity. And if not, I think it'll still be a great experience for him.
How do you feel about this 24-team playoff bracket to begin with? Like, just in general, Kyle, how do you feel about, you know, this being the determining you know, factor in the end, that they decided to go with this process as opposed to so many other options? How do you feel about it as the GM of a team that was likely going to be in as a top 16 team?
Yeah, I think they put a lot of work into it, and I just don't think there was a perfect way to just decide it. And yes, I mean, we were purely based on playoff odds and probabilities. We were, you know, we were looking good, though on some nights you wouldn't say that about us. And lots of people will remind us that, you know, we did have our ups and downs, but purely on the probability standpoint, if you look only at the math of it, which I know has been done over the last couple of days, our odds were very good, and now we'll have to play in a series. But I think in the long run, Brian, I think this will be a very, very good thing for our group and for the growth and development of our group of players and our whole organization. Because if we're going to win the Stanley Cup now, we have to win 19 games rather than 16. And we're going to start off with a very difficult opponent that obviously made waves last year in the playoffs and has had a great year. So, I think it's going to be very difficult for us. The challenge is obvious, and it'll provide us with a great chance to grow. So yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if we just were to start off and we were to be gifted that playoff positioning. But I think the positive for us in this is that it makes the challenge a little bit harder. And I think that's what we need at this time in our development as an organization.
Kyle, lots of talk coming out of yesterday about hub cities, and we're fascinated, for whatever reason, where they will hold these two hub cities. The pitch is led by the organization, so maybe you can explain to us why the Leafs want to be one of the hub cities.
Yeah, I haven't had a whole lot to do with that. Honestly, it's been my task here has been more focusing on our players and our coaches, and I've been privy to a little bit of it. I just think that I think all the teams in the league, from the sounds of it, Mike, that have the capacity in terms of practice facilities and game rinks that can handle hockey in July and August, and then access to hotels and the various different checkpoints that they were looking for near to the rink and security and so on and so forth. It seems like most of those teams bid because I think it was probably the right thing to do for the league and to try to give some options during this time. So I think, you know, without getting too much into it, I think we're in Toronto is a good place just because of the various services and the facilities that are available. But whatever is decided there, I think first and foremost, it has to be safe, not only for the players and for the staffs and the league personnel will have to be there, but also for the community and that the community will be in a good enough place by that time to be able to host.
All right, Kyle, we'll get you out of here by, you know, putting a bow on the regular season, because Gary Bettman said yesterday that the season is officially over. We're moving into the next stage of hockey here in the NHL. So you look back on it now, you guys played 70 games. There were a lot of ups and downs. It was kind of a soap opera season from my perspective. I can only assume it was similar from your spot. But now that we know that it's officially behind us, what will stick out for you? How will you look back on this season 5-10 years down the road?
A lot happened during the year, Brian. I think the thing that I was most happy about was the fact that we had a lot of disappointing stretches and moments during the year with the way that we performed, and not just on the ice, but, you know, myself and the coaching staff with Sheldon and so on and so forth. There were times when we were all not really thrilled and happy with ourselves. And the thing that I came to like most about the group and what we saw, even going back to the very last game that we played, like we'd come off a very disappointing trip to California where we really didn't play well in San Jose. We played well in Los Angeles and couldn't score. And then, you know, we didn't play really well in Anaheim. And, you know, we were coming home after the previous week going to Florida and then having a great week there and then letting our foot off the gas in California. And we came home and had Tampa Bay sitting waiting for us. And I thought the one thing that the group had showed, whether it was in Tampa Bay after the Carolina game with David Ayers in net, or the stretch in February where we went into Buffalo and Pittsburgh and got our butt kicked, especially when we had dangerous opponents waiting for us in those moments when we were vulnerable and our back was against the wall, the team was beginning to show a real ability to push back and buckle down defensively. A lot of those games we, you know, now that the season's over, we can say in a lot of those games we didn't have, in the last few games, we got Riley back, but there was some of those stretches we didn't have Riley, Muzzin, or CeCe. And I was really proud of the way that the group was able to respond in those moments. I wish we were never in those positions and we were a little bit more consistent, but I think part of the growth is being able to find your way out of it when things aren't going well. And I thought the group was really starting to show that. And I think the next step for us is to embrace those obstacles as they come and to become much more consistent in our mindset and our day-to-day performance. And I think that'll eliminate a lot of the ups and downs and drama that comes along with it.
Always great catching up with you, Kyle. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Perfect. Okay, thanks, guys. Have a great night.
There he is, Kyle Dubas, the GM of the Leafs. All right, so a lot to digest there. I thought it, you know, kind of interesting what his perspective on the 2014 playoff. He's kind of indicated, hey, we would have preferred 16 and we think we were in, mm-hmm. but hey, this is a challenge for a group that continues to need to prove themselves, and I think he's accurate in that. So we'll touch on that. We'll recap what Kyle said. Matthew Schneider coming up in the next hour from the NHLPA. Hour three up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.